Cheney and I agree on nothing, no issues. But what we do believe in is that the United States should retain its democratic foundations.
What do you know? What do you know? I agree with Bernie Sanders and I agree with Dick Cheney.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Apparently so.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. I can't, Wendell, I don't know, hopefully you can hear me in there. I can't hear a word I'm saying, so I think we might need to adjust that those headphones, that amp down there. Otherwise, anyway, hope you all can hear me, even if I can't hear me. It has been a while they work on that. It has been a while since we've been able to open the phone lines to listeners just to make things even more complicated. We haven't been able to do so since, I believe, before the Democratic National Convention. So I am looking forward to doing so today in advance of Tuesday's critical presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Our number will be 818-985-5735 if you'd like to queue up early to discuss your hopes and your fears and or advice for the candidates on the eve of the one and only presidential debate, as vote by mail is just about to get underway. If you'd like to sound off, as Wendell likes to say, now's the time to call and queue up and get in line. Can you guys hear me okay in there, by the way? Y'all can hear me just fine. All right. So the fact that I can't hear myself, I'll ignore that. And, Wendell, did we turn that down, that up, those mics down there on the bottom? They're all the way up, eh? All right. Well.
Question is, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. I can barely hear you.
Okay, good.
All right.
Hi, it's Desi, the producer. We're trying to get it fixed now.
All right. And we'll see if I can barely hear callers when we get there. Oh, I'm starting to hear something. Anyway, let me press on while they do the work all around me. Because once again, the climate is getting in our way a bit. So I'm glad we can hear Desi. The climate's getting in our way as it does more and more frequently these days. So we need to start there. We are still in the throes of a terrible heat wave here in Southern California, which is inflaming literally some very serious problems that we'll get to in a moment. But it's not only here today. A bridge collapsed and a bus was swept away by flooding in Vietnam on Monday, raising the death toll in the South Asian nation to at least 64 people at this point from a typhoon and subsequent heavy rains that also damaged factories in northern industrial hubs there, according to state media late today. That number, sadly, is expected to rise. 9 people have died on Saturday after Typhoon Yagi made landfall in Vietnam. The rest died in the floods and the landslides that followed on Sunday and Monday. according to state media. Storms like Typhoon Yagi are, quote, getting stronger due to climate change, primarily because warmer ocean waters provide more energy to fuel the storms, leading to increased wind speeds and heavier rainfall. That, according to Benjamin Horton, the director of the Earth Observatory of Singapore, echoing, of course, what both climate scientists and our own Desi Doyen has been warning on this program for years now.
Oh, yeah.
The water levels of several rivers in North Vietnam are dangerously high right now. A bus was washed away carrying 20 people. It's bad. Typhoon Yagi was the strongest typhoon to hit Vietnam in decades when it made landfall on Saturday. Winds up to 92 miles per hour. The country's meteorological agency warned that continuing downpours could cause still more floods and more landslides, more deadly landslides. Before hitting Vietnam, Yagi caused at least 20 deaths in the Philippines last week and 4 deaths in southern China. Chinese authorities said infrastructure losses across one island province includes some 57,000 houses that either collapsed or were damaged, with power and water outages and roads damaged or impassable there. Here at home with Tropical Storm Francine, you may not have heard of that because it just spun up in the Gulf just today. It's expected now to become a hurricane by Wednesday and make landfall. It is currently aiming toward southern Louisiana and Texas. But for the moment, we have a different set of climate disasters out west here, though they are all thanks to the same cause. More than 2 million acres are currently burning across the western U.S., resulting in emergency declarations and evacuations across the region. Those who do not have to evacuate are dealing with lost power, closed schools, canceled plans due to fires, and excessive heat. It was 104 as I walked into the studio today. Even a performance here at the Hollywood Bowl was called off on Sunday thanks to an overloaded power distribution center in the valley that became overloaded, quote, due to high demand impacted further by the extreme heat. That according to the Department of L.A. Water and Power.
Now, the L.A. Times, I should add, is reporting that one of the issues with that power outage was a natural gas plant in Pasadena that the heat caused its equipment to fail.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know, that is an additional problem that does happen with, thermal power plants that burn things for electricity. They do get too hot in this heat. But luckily for most of the state, the build out of solar energy and plus utility scale batteries has really helped to avoid more blackouts across the state during these extreme heat waves that we've been having.
And that's a good thing, given that apparently there are now 70 active large fires burning across the western U.S. According to the federal government's National Fire Information Center right now, the majority are raging west of the Mississippi, with multiple fires in Arizona, California, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. Wildfires in California, Idaho, and Nevada have proven especially alarming as the dangerous combinations of flames and record heat have now led to evacuations and the destruction of homes and businesses. The most troubling fire is here in Southern California right now. There's several of them, but the one, according to CAL FIRE, being called the Line Fire, is out in San Bernardino County. That's about an hour east of L.A. near Big Bear and Arrowhead Lakes. I know we got a lot of listeners out there. It has so far burned more than 20,000 acres, and it's just about 3% contained as we go to air today. The San Bernardino County Sheriff Department announced mandatory evacuations for about 4,800 homes in the Running Springs and Arrow Bear Lake areas. We know that area pretty well. Hundreds more have been evacuated in the cities of Highland, Forest Falls, Mountain Home Village, and Angeles Oaks. According to CAL FIRE, there are currently 36,300 structures that are threatened, including single and multifamily homes, commercial buildings, and other structures. High temperatures in recent days have made things worse as Southern California ranges from 95 to 105 degrees. That's about 10 to 20 degrees above average. An air quality alert has also been issued due to heat wave and elevated fine pollution levels due to wildfire smoke. That, according to the National Weather Service. The line fire is said to be so big right now that it is creating, is this true, Des, its own weather system?
Yes.
Thunderstorms with winds that are causing, quote, very erratic behavior or the blaze or on the blaze as vegetation is, quote, critically dry, according to CAL FIRE. But it is creating its own thunderstorms?
Yes. Well, part of that is because of the extreme heat and the extreme winds. You know, the heat actually sucks the moisture out of the plants and out of the soil, which, of course, makes it extremely, extremely dry and much more faster to catch fire, much more fast to cast to catch fire. And it does. It creates its own winds. The heat from the fire itself goes up so quickly into the atmosphere that it does tend to create fire tornadoes and lightning as well, which also helps the fire spread. Of course, we do realize that climate change is a major part of all of this.
Yes,
it is creating the warmer, drier conditions that are leading to this longer and more active fire season that we are now seeing. And, you know, the same thing is happening with storms that are being intensified. So from Typhoon Yagi over in Vietnam to Hurricane Francine in the Gulf of Mexico, which is rapidly intensifying.
Right.
You know, these things are happening very suddenly. So I think it's really important for people to understand that extreme weather can strike your community at any time. So it's important to make sure that you have thought through what you might need in your household to make it through if there is, say, a power outage, like, you know, in the middle of a heat wave, like out in Pasadena. Or if you have a sudden hurricane that whips up, you know, just a few days and you're not necessarily ready. So now is a great time when it's not an emergency to try to make sure that you are getting ready for that.
Well done. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Hopefully you in there and folks out in our audience can hear me as well. With all of that in mind, we've got one presidential candidate that is part of an administration that has shepherded the single largest investment to take on this climate disaster, from Vietnam to California to Nevada to Idaho. We've got, you know, one candidate who understands what's going on, and we've got another one who denies that there is any problem at all, that all of this is totally normal, and whose solution to, you know, well, pretty much everything so far this season, including even things like inflation, his solution to everything, and I quote, is drill, baby, drill. So, though it shouldn't have been surprising by now at all, it was still remarkable to hear Liz Cheney, the daughter of oil man and former Vice President Dick Cheney, declaring last week at Duke University in North Carolina that she would be voting for Kamala Harris this year.
I think it is crucially important for people to recognize not only is what I've just said about the danger that Trump poses something that should prevent people from voting for him, but I don't believe that we have the luxury of writing in candidates' names, particularly in swing states. And as a conservative, as someone who believes in and cares about the Constitution, I have thought deeply about this. And because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris in this election.
The lifelong rock-ribbed Republican and former top member of the GOP leadership in the House, Liz Cheney, followed up that remarkable moment on Friday with perhaps an even more stunning declaration when asked directly about all of this by journalist Mike Leibovich during the Texas Tribune Festival in the Lone Star State.
Dick Cheney, your father, a beloved figure among Democrats for many, many years. Do you, if you know who he will be supporting or who he'll be voting for, do you care to share with us who he might be voting for?
Dick Cheney will be voting for Kamala Harris.
Okay. Wow.
Wow, indeed. So talk about a world turned upside down at this point. Former Vice President Dick Cheney, in a statement, confirmed that he will indeed cast his ballot for Vice President Kamala Harris this fall. In his statement, he noted, quote, "In our nation's 240-year history, there has never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic than Donald Trump." And by the way, prior to Donald Trump, I might have said the man who was the greatest threat to our country was Dick Cheney. Anyway, Cheney said he tried to steal the last election using lies and violence to keep himself in power after the voters had rejected him. "He can never be trusted with power again," said Dick Cheney. Quote, "As citizens, we have a duty to put country above partisanship to defend our Constitution. That is why I will be casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris," he said. Harris campaign chair Jen O'Malley Dillon said the current vice president was proud to have Cheney's support, noting in a statement, quote, Dick Cheney joins hundreds of Republicans who are backing the vice president over President Trump because, as Vice President Cheney said, the future of our republic is at stake in this election. The Cheneys are the latest in a steady stream of Republicans who, despite policy differences, say they plan to cast ballots for Harris. Last week, more than 200 Republicans who have worked for both Bush presidents, Senator Mitt Romney, and the late Senator John McCain, announced that they are also backing Kamala Harris. Noting in a statement, quote, "Of course, we have plenty of honest ideological disagreements with Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. That's to be expected. The alternative, however, is simply untenable." That, according to the statement from the former staffers to George W. Bush, to Mitt Romney, to John McCain. Several prominent GOP critics of Trump, including former Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger, appeared on stage at the DNC last month to back Harris. In his speech, Kinzinger urged voters to, quote, "put country first," and argued that Trump has suffocated the soul of the GOP. Liz Cheney added during her remarks at the Texas Trib Festival, quote, "If you think about the moment that we're in and you think about how serious this moment is, my dad believes there's never been an individual in our country who is as grave a threat to our democracy as Donald Trump is. And that's the moment that we're facing," she said, which, of course, leads me to have to utter the words I never thought I would utter. Liz and Dick Cheney are absolutely right.
Surprise.
And I'm not happy about it. The former Wyoming congresswoman also said during her Friday interview with Leibovich at the Texas Tribune Festival that she would support Democratic Congressman Colin Allred in his Texas U.S. Senate bid against Republican Ted Cruz.
Here in Texas, you guys do have a tremendous, serious candidate running for the United States Senate, and his name is
You're stepping on the news, guys. Let her speak.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. It's not Ted Cruz. Colin Allred is somebody I served with in the House, and somebody who really, when you think about the kind of leaders our country needs, and going to this point about, you know, you might not agree on every policy position, but we need people who are going to serve in good faith. We need people who are honorable public servants. And in this race, that is Colin Allred. So I'll be working on his behalf.
Now, I realize all of this, from Liz and Dick Cheney, of all people, might lead some of my listeners to actually think twice about supporting Kamala Harris at this point. After all, if Liz and Dick Cheney are in favor of them, well, I understand. In fact, I quipped last week a couple of times after Liz had first said that she'd be voting for Kamala Harris that all of this has sort of made me rethink my own life choices. But even as Bernie Sanders noted on Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
What I think Dick and Liz Cheney are saying is that in this existential moment in American history, it's not just issues. Cheney and I agree on nothing, no issues. But what we do believe in is that the United States should retain its democratic foundations. And it's not just Cheney. I think there is a significant number of Republicans that say, well, you know, I may not agree with the vice president on this issue or that issue, but I cannot support somebody who's a pathological liar, somebody who fomented an insurrection to overthrow the election return. So I applaud the Cheneys for their courage in defending democracy. Obviously, on all the issues, we have very different points of view.
I feel you, Bernie. I also realize that many of our listeners here in California may also think that, well, you know what? It's California. It's going to go blue no matter what. I can afford to vote for third party. And of course, that is true. You can. And I would never tell anyone how to vote or how to not vote, including, you know, people who for some reason choose to not vote at all in this election. If you choose not to vote, that is your right. But I will point out that in defense of our democracy this year, that, yes, a decisive result in the popular vote, even though we go by the Electoral College, but in the popular vote, a decisive result there is critical, as I see it, in what I have been describing as phase one of this year's elections. That is, everything between now and the close of polls on November 5. The casting of the actual votes between now and then. That's what I see as phase one. And during phase one, yes, even here in California, I believe that running up the numbers in defense of democracy has never been more important. And when you got guys like Dick Cheney and Bernie Sanders agreeing with me, well, hopefully that's going to make some, it's going to help some of our listeners stand up and pay attention. Because I think in defense of democracy, running up the totals, if only to make it more difficult for Donald Trump to claim that the election has been stolen from him, will be critical this year. And to prevent his apparatchik in Congress from going along with him when the Electoral College votes during phase two of this year's elections and when those results are certified by Congress on January 6th. Sure. I know Donald Trump is going to make the claims that the election was stolen if he loses. There is no question about that. But do we really need to help him? So I'm not sure that even those here in California have the luxury of voting third party this year, as I see it, if the fight for democracy is that important as I believe it is, as Bernie Sanders believes it is, and apparently Dick Cheney believes it is, but you can ignore him if you like. You may feel differently. If you do, I'd love you to give me a call, 818-985-KPFK. Tell me why. As always, I'd love to hear from you. If you concur with me, of course, I guess I'd love to hear from you as well at 818-985-5735. But for those who do not concur with me, let me read you what Donald Trump had to say over the weekend in one of his latest Truth Social Twitter screeds, which, forgive me, I will read in full, quote, and in all caps, cease and desist is how it begins. I, together with many attorneys and legal scholars, am watching the sanctity of the 2024 presidential election very closely because I know better than most the rampant cheating and skullduggery that has taken place by the Democrats in the 2020 presidential election. Writes Donald Trump. Never mind that in the 4 years since then, neither Trump nor his supporters have been able to show any evidence whatsoever that there was enough fraud or tabulation error, much less cheating and skullduggery in any state that would have changed the results of any state in the 2020 election. Not even close. Back to Trump. He writes, "It was a disgrace to our nation. Therefore, The 2024 election, where votes have just started being cast, will be under the closest professional scrutiny. And when I win, in all caps, those people that cheated, in all caps, will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, which will include long-term prison sentences so that this depravity of justice does not happen again. We cannot let our country further devolve into a third world nation, and we won't, in all caps. Please beware, Trump warned in his tweet, that this legal exposure extends to lawyers, to political operatives, donors, illegal voters, and corrupt election officials. Those involved in unscrupulous behavior will be sought out, caught, and prosecuted at levels, unfortunately, never seen before in our country. In other words, before a single vote has been cast in 2024, Donald Trump is vowing that if he wins, he will imprison lawyers. He will imprison elected officials. He will imprison Democratic donors for cheating in an election. I guess he's referring to 2020 there, because we don't know anything about the 2024 election as far as whether they'll be cheating or not. But there is no evidence of cheating in 2020. None. Other than a handful of largely Republican vote fraudsters who voted twice in a number of states, as we have reported over the past 4 years, and as a bunch of Republican media influencers have been paid to pretend, paid by, yes, Russia, if you heard last Thursday's broadcast, to try to lie to you about what happened in the 2020 election. The threat, as NBC observed from Donald Trump, was one of the most wide-ranging he has made for president after his 2020 defeat, as TPM warns today. It's also quite serious, a promise to imprison his enemies junta style that extends not just to his political foes, but now to those who run elections, to those who donate money to candidates. It is, they write, a broadside against democratic society of the sort that was unrivaled in American history before Donald Trump. The threat functions on a few levels, they note. It's a bid to instill fear in those who oppose Donald Trump, to intimidate voters. A note that was picked up on by Mark Elias, a longtime Democratic election lawyer. He said in response to that screed, quote, "We won't let Donald Trump intimidate us. We won't let him suppress the vote." The ominous post also signals to Trump's base again that any election Donald Trump loses is not one that they can accept. Trump and his allies, as you know, filed dozens of unsuccessful cases in the 2020 election in their attempt to steal the results, just as Dick Cheney said. Almost every single one of those cases was laughed out of court by Democratic and Republican-appointed judges alike, including some who were appointed by Donald Trump himself. And since then, as we have been reporting in some detail, Republicans, their new legal fights are being waged in battleground states all over the country ahead of the November election. And they are, in no small part, meant to both suppress the vote, if possible, and help them contest the vote afterwards. Suppress the vote in phase one, contest the vote in stage two, in the event that they lose. If they win, of course, well, everything was fine. No cheating. As I detailed last week in one of our broadcasts, Republicans are now suing to toss some 225,000 voters off of the rolls in the great battleground state of North Carolina. They're doing that now. We're 57 days away from the election as we go to air. And they're trying to throw 225,000 voters off the rolls right now without any evidence. Because, as they argue in the suit, some of them might be non-citizens, even though they have zero evidence to support that any of them are actually non-citizens, and despite the fact that Republicans know that it is far too close to the election under the Federal National Voter Registration Act for mass purges of voting rolls to legally be carried out. They know that. They could have brought this lawsuit months and months ago. They didn't. They waited until after it was too late to purge these voters that they are claiming could be, maybe, who knows, be non-citizens. Those claims that they know they will lose are being made so that Republicans can claim during phase two that there was fraud. They can do that in court. They can do that on January 6th next year, and they can claim the courts did nothing about it, even though they tried to let everyone know before the election. Again, in the event that Trump loses. If he wins, it's fine. So with the race between Harris and Trump now said to be a virtual tie, or close enough within the margin of error, according to most polling averages right now, and on the eve of a potentially make-or-break debate for both candidates on Tuesday night, and as I haven't been able to open the phones to listeners for several weeks now, well, I'd like to try to do that right now. Fingers crossed. I'd love to hear from you all today. 818-985-5735 about your hopes and your fears moving forward. 818-985-KPFK. I've got some hopes. I've got some fears, but I will wait and share those until the next block, unless you guys want to sort of set all of that aside with your own ideas. 818-985-KPFK. And by the way, if you got any advice for Kamala Harris in Tuesday night's debate, feel free to let me know that as well, because apparently everyone in the world seems to have something that they think Kamala Harris must do on Tuesday night. I hope she's keeping track. Everyone's a political expert these days, I guess. Your calls are coming up next right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Hey, this is Brad. If you haven't noticed by now, it's no easy feat finding facts, real facts, not alternative facts, over your public airwaves. We try to bring you real facts, truth, and clarity without fear or favor each and every day on the broadcast. But we need your help to do it. If you enjoy the show and or get something from it, please give back a bit if you can by visiting us at bradblog.com/donate. Your support helps Desi and me continue to bring you real, independent, progressive news 5 days a week over your public airwaves. We simply can't do it without your help, and that help is needed more now than ever. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to make a one-time donation, or even better, automated monthly support. It'll take you about 60 seconds, and you can rest easy knowing that we'll be here every day making sense of it all, or at least trying to. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thanks.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You know, I'm not even going to play this right now, this talk that Donald Trump had over the weekend at one of his rallies in Wisconsin about removing millions of what he calls illegal aliens from the country, 10, 20 million of them in what he described would be a bloody story.
Yes.
If he's elected to a second term.
Yes, but that is what he said.
So I'm not going to play that audio right now, but just to sort of put that in context, remember, removing 10 or 20 million people from the country, as he claims he's going to do, arrest them, throw them into cages, and then deport them from the country somehow. And he's going to prosecute election officials, elected officials, Democratic donors, attorneys, all Democrats, if he wins again. These are his own words. These are his own promises. So as far as my fears go, you can probably guess what they are. As far as my hopes go, it is for the good of democracy and the survivability of this flawed but critical American experiment. My hope is that voters figure out that they need to support democracy, and that that means this year rejecting Donald Trump. But my fear is what will happen when and if Trump loses this year. I have not been sure which I fear more, Trump winning or Trump losing. 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to some phones here before I scare myself too much. Let me go to Randy in Huntington Beach on line one. Hey, Randy, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello, Brad. Nice to talk to you.
Good to be talked to.
I've got an idea regarding the debates. In the past, our debates have been political theater. For some reason, people think a humorous moment or a gotcha comment allows them to win a debate. And I think what we need to do is have a debate rubric, something real simple, that will allow us to control the narrative after the debates are through. For example, we know what topics are going to come up. We know that immigration and borders will come up. So when they're asked a question about that, the candidate you think that answered it best, give them 1 point. If a candidate dodges a question, take away a point. If they lie about the question, take away a point. So at the end of the night, people will be able to say, look, on immigration, we've got Harris 5 and Trump negative 2.
Okay.
And that'll allow us to
let me,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, let me ask you about that, Randy. So you're saying if they answer the question, merely if they answer it, they get a point? Doesn't matter if it's a good answer? Doesn't matter if the answer
has anything to do? You get to decide who's going to win that issue. For example, Trump may just mumble about stuff, and Harris may have a coherent argument, and then you give Harris the point.
Okay.
Trump, you just leave it zero at that stage.
Of course, then you're assuming...
Because what we need to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
Well, you're assuming then that the media is going to ask both of the candidates the same question, which they're not going to do, by the way.
No, but they will each talk about these issues. We know they're going to talk about immigration. We know they're going to talk about the economy.
Okay.
And we will be able to evaluate which one I think is making more sense.
Okay.
And if we talk about it in quantitative terms, it's a lot more. It makes a lot more sense than just saying, "Well, I think so and so won."
Okay.
You can say, "Look, they won because here are the, you know, here's the question, and here are the answers, and here is why I awarded Harris the point because Trump dodged it or his answers were nonsensical."
Well, of course, nonsensical is in the eye of the beholder, Randy. Some people are going to say that was a great answer. You and I might look at it and say it was crazy. But here's what I want you to do, Randy, because I got a lot of folks who want to get in today. I want to try to get to a lot of callers. I hope are you planning on watching it Tuesday night and scoring the debate in that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Give us a call next week, will you? And let us know how it went.
I will try.
Let us know who won. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank
and
you.
I recommend everybody else do that, too. I'm going to try to post results on Democratic Underground as well.
All right.
And I hope other folks will.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Good luck with that.
Sure.
I will look forward to hearing about it. Appreciate it. 818-985-KPFK. We will hear who definitively won because there will be a score. Let me go to – now, usually we go to our friend Morris in Pasadena. Usually we go to him at the end of the show, but it looks like – he's got a point. Is he still there?
That's not Mo from Long Beach. That's Mo.
Oh, that's
in
a different Mo.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Oh, you're right. Okay. Well, let's go to Mo from Pasadena. Hey, Mo. Hey, other Mo from Pasadena. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. Oh, Mo. We lost Mo.
I guess we lost him.
All right. We lost.
No, I'm here.
There you
I'm
go.
Here.
Hey, Mo. What's going on?
Hi. I think in order for Kamala Harris to win this, I think she's really going to have to explain why BlackRock is the economic engine that's sort of driving economic policy for both herself, for Biden, and previously for Trump. I think she's going to have to really do something that says, I'm going to do something different. And given that BlackRock is writing economic policies for all the elected officials, I think that's a problematic
non-differentiator. Mo, tell us who BlackRock is.
The financial institution. BlackRock, right?
You're trying to make the point. So, what is it that BlackRock is doing?
I'm pretty sure it's BlackRock.
You're pretty sure it's BlackRock, yet you feel that you know that they are literally writing all of the financial information? What did you say?
No, I mean
financial
economic policies
for Kamala Harris.
The individuals who
and
run
Donald
BlackRock
Trump.
Are the advisors.
Okay.
the economic advisors, and I think that's a problematic issue.
Now, why
in terms of, because we have the same corporations who are pushing a similar agenda in the sense that they're pushing an economic agenda that is counter to democracy. That's my point.
Well, then let me ask you this: if what you said is true, because you said that it was Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and Donald Trump before that, if Donald Trump was also being guided by BlackRock, why does Kamala Harris have to answer to your charge and not Donald Trump?
Oh, no, he has to answer to it, but I think the question is, why are you using the same sort of financial advice? Why are they revolving doors happening in terms of both parties? Why aren't they differentiating themselves more? And why are corporations really the ones driving economic policy as well as other policies?
Now, I think those are valid questions. The BlackRock part of it, I guess I would still have to be convinced. But Harris, for example, just announced that she would like to institute a tax on unrealized capital gains for taxpayers who earn more than $100 million. Now, in theory, that would hurt a great deal the people who run places like BlackRock, correct?
Right.
And so, are you saying that BlackRock is writing policies like that for Kamala Harris, calling on the taxation of unrealized capital gains for people who earn more than $100 million?
She was talking about an increase from 20 to 28%, if I remember correctly, and Biden was talking about an increase to 41%. So her number is actually lower than Biden's number, if I remember correctly.
Well, no, I think you're talking about marginal tax rates, and she like Biden, wants to see the marginal tax rates go up. This is a totally different tax. This is on unrealized capital gains. In other words,
unrealized capital gains.
Yeah, but only for those who made more than $100 million. So I'm not sure. I've heard folks over on Fox News talking about BlackRock as some conspiratorial thing. I guess I would need to know the specifics of what you're talking about, and it sounds to me like you might need to know the specifics of what you're talking about before I can answer that question.
If I was in front of my computer, yeah, I would send it to you, but I'm driving. But
all right. You can send it to me when you get home. I'd love to see it, Mo. My email address, bradcast@bradblog.com. Thank you. Drive safely.
I will send that to you.
All right. Okay. Thank you, sir. Drive safely. Let me go to Joe in Hesperia. Hey, Joe. Welcome to the Bradcast, sir.
Yes. Hello?
Yes. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to bring up, you brought up Dick Cheney siding with Kamala Harris.
Yes.
The election.
Yes.
And
crazy,
a few days ago, you announced that, I believe it was either NPR or your station, announced that after Robert Kennedy withdrew from the election, he met with Donald Trump, and they spoke out against the neocons. And so what I surmise is that Dick Cheney has heard about this, and now it's a tit-for-tat thing where he's now choosing to support Kamala Harris instead. Did you hear about that?
Well, let's see. They have been Donald Trump pretends he's against neocons, even though he does pretty much every policy that all the neocons like. They were Trump and RFK were in contact before RFK dropped out. RFK was basically fishing for a promise for a position in his administration. I don't think that Dick Cheney endorsing Kamala Harris has anything to do with what you're talking about. That what you're talking about may be true, but I don't think it has anything to do with RFK and Donald Trump. I think it has to do with the fact that Liz Cheney has despised Donald Trump for years, that her father despises Donald Trump for years after Donald Trump has gone after his daughter. So to me, it's all completely understandable, and it happens to be correct that Donald Trump is an extraordinary threat to democracy, to our republic, to everything we have held dear in this country for some 250 years, as I see it.
Well, if you look into it, a couple days ago, you announced that they met after Robert withdrew from the race. And they had a discussion about two things that I heard. One was that Donald Trump said he'd immediately open up all records on the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
on JFK, he would immediately do so.
Yeah.
And then they also spoke about the neocons, Trump being against the neocons.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't me. Maybe that was somebody else on the station that you're listening to right now. That wasn't me, so I can't speak for what it was that somebody else said.
Well,
if you did an internet search,
you could find out about it. But here's another point.
Well, let me just finish one point on that. Donald Trump was president for 4 years. So if there was something that he was going to do that he felt was important to do, that opening up the files on the Kennedy assassinations or something was important, he certainly could have done that in his first 4 years. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but I think he just drew closer to Robert Kennedy after Robert dropped out. Donald Trump, how it was presented was Donald Trump said, hey, come over to my house or wherever, we'll meet, we'll discuss some things. Right. And they had a nice discussion and talked about what had happened JFK.
All right. So what's the point? What's the point you're trying to make with that, Joe?
Well, I'm just saying Dick Cheney is now coming out against Donald Trump, but he's doing it because Donald Trump came out against his neocon movement.
Are you saying Dick Cheney is now against Donald Trump because he wants to prevent the truth about what happened in the Kennedy assassination from coming out? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I just brought that up. I just brought that up as another point.
All right.
I believe Dick Cheney's the kind of guy that looks out for his own.
I agree.
And I've never understood how we've never had a congressional investigation into the Iraq war, which was started for false reasons.
I agree.
It's the most absurd thing in American history. Let me bring up one other point.
That's a pretty high bar,
You even want to talk about election validity, and you don't bring up computer voting? What percent of the people vote into computers, sir?
Dude, is this the first time you've ever heard me on the radio?
I'm just asking. I've heard you about three times.
Okay.
You played the worst song I've ever heard the other day.
Okay.
Try to play that song again. Okay, go ahead, though.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what song you're talking about. But anyway, 100% of the people who vote in the United States vote on a system that is tallied by a computer. About a third of the folks in the United States vote on a system where they actually have to use a touchscreen voting system to cast their votes. Those votes are 100% unverifiable. What is your point, Joe, before I let you go?
The name's Joel, but the point is that if you trust computer voting, you're a fool. I spoke to a lady.
I don't. Thanks, Joel. I'll let you go. I don't trust it. And the reason you shouldn't trust it either is probably because of something that I have reported at Bradblog.com over the past 20 years, including the stuff and nonsense that Sidney Powell took from Bradblog.com after the 2020 election and falsely claimed that it proved that the election was stolen somehow by Joe Biden. If you really, really want to get into computer voting issues, my friend, I think you've called the wrong person. Go check out bradblog.com and see what you might learn over there. Let me go to who else do we have here? James in Venice, a bunch of dudes. Where are all the women? James in Venice, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
I'd like your opinion on whether or not President Biden should call up the National Guard to defend the vote this January, and perhaps also the Electoral College should be protected.
Yeah, well, okay, let me respond to that, James. Interesting question. No, I do not think the National Guard should be called to protect the election unless we have evidence of some sort of violence or something. But no, I don't think we need armed military people roaming the streets during the election. When it comes to the Electoral College, there's not much that a National Guard can do to protect that. Other than to protect the Capitol. And if you need to protect the Capitol, then sure, National Guard seems appropriate to do that and should have been called out last time. Yeah.
Brad, I just don't think we have, after given the January 6th insurrection, I don't think it should be left to chance whether we have enough protection mm-hmm. for the Congress of the U.S. Mm-hmm. or not.
I can get behind
the
you
police
there.
That were on duty there. Last January 6th mm-hmm. was so tremendously overwhelmed. Yeah. Something should that condition should never have existed right. when it did.
Right, particularly given all of the intel that we had about what was likely to happen. So I completely agree. The problem was the National Guard in such a case is called out by the President of the United States. The President of the United States did not want to have the National Guard there. And
that
if
president was Trump.
Right. And if Joe Biden has intelligence that suggests that National Guard would be needed on January 6th this year, yeah, I have no problem doing that. But, I mean, they can't – you know, I don't want National Guard roaming the streets across the United States, you know, unless there's a very specific piece of intelligence that, you know, suggests that we need that sort of thing. But other than that, no. Does that answer
I'm
your
just
question?
Wondering what would prevent it from happening again, because I'm pretty sure Harris is going to be voted for president, and all the Proud Boys are not going to stand by. And who's going to be there to make sure that they don't wreak havoc like they did last election?
Well, we've got law enforcement officials. If we need more, yeah, there's the National Guard. And as to being sure that Kamala Harris is going to win, well, we will see. I think a lot of work needs to be done. But we'll see.
Okay. Thanks, Brad.
I hear you, though. I feel you. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry. Welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Washington Post, July 19th, 2023, headline, Judge clarifies, yes, Donald Trump was found to have raped E. Jean Carroll.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the Democrats won't raise that issue in the debate. That's point number one.
Okay.
And this one is sizzling hot, Tom. This morning on Tom Hartman, mm-hmm. a caller called in, and he said that when Ms. Harris debates Trump in the debate, mm-hmm. Whenever she feels he lies, she should raise her index finger to indicate that. And I just think that that mechanism would serve to help us all understand that Trump is going to be lying a whole lot during this debate tomorrow.
Yeah, she's going to have to be wagging that finger quite a bit throughout that debate, about all 90 minutes of it, at least when Donald Trump is talking. And I guess that is because the suggestion is because the mics, because Donald Trump's team insisted that the mics be turned off when a candidate wasn't speaking. So therefore, you're suggesting she raise her index finger to indicate the man is lying.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Larry. Oh, and by the way, I do think that Democrats have talked about the fact that Donald Trump is an accused, I think, sexual assailant, as they call it, or something.
I think it's
like
adjudicated sexual assault.
Yeah. You know, there are so many things. There are so many crimes that this guy has been convicted of at this point. How do you keep it all straight? Not to mention the things that actually matter to this country, like policy ideas and, you know, not breaking up NATO and not shredding the Constitution, as Donald Trump has literally called for. So, yeah, but I hear you. Thanks for the call. Let me go to Mike already in L.A.? Okay, there we go. Mike in L.A., welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. I just wanted to raise a point that I hope comes up in the debate. And that is that we know Donald Trump is a genius because he told us so himself.
Yes.
And shortly after the Democratic ticket changed, he described Ms. Harris as someone he knows and being a low IQ individual. Well, of course, he was lying about number one, so we don't really know what to make of his assessment of her intellect. So yes. I would suggest that both candidates be offered the opportunity to take standardized IQ tests and have the publishers results published. I don't know how Mr. Trump could possibly resist the temptation to get his own true worth revealed.
Yeah. Well, you know, he doesn't actually reveal the results of any tests, including the test by doctors who supposedly examined his ear that was shot with an assassin's bullet, as he claimed.
It's time for something else, then. Yeah,
I hear you. All right. Let's do it. The IQ test. I'm in favor of it. Thanks, Mike. And now, Indeed, since we evoked his name, it's kind of like Beetlejuice, Mo in Long Beach. Hey, Mo, the original Mo. Welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Good to hear from you, Bradley. Check this out. I do not believe that this race is close. And when the VP debates with Donald Trump, all he has to do is remind him that he blew off $8 trillion. And then remind him of what would $8 trillion do to this country? What could we have done with that money? Would that have paid off student loan debt? Would that have been this homelessness in this country? What could we have done with $8 trillion? Now, we're not going to talk about the six bankruptcies. What could we have done with the $8 trillion that man blew off? Are we going to put it back in the White House? You got to be crazy. Talk to you later, Bradley.
Thank you, Mo. Well done. We're right at the line. Got to get out. Crazy show. You'd think we hadn't been here for weeks and weeks and weeks. But anyway, we'll be back with you tomorrow. My thanks to our board operator, Wendell Handy, to my producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us and for putting up with our technical issues throughout. We'll try to keep that from happening in the future. If you missed any portion of today's show, download anytime for free at bradblog.com. No paywall. You can also drop me email. Email, I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site, yes, still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We'll see you at all of the above until we see you here next time. Hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
To the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.